Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Josh Schlossberg. He's editor of the Biomass Monitor, the nation's leading publication investigating the whole story on bioenergy, biomass, and biofuels. Subscribe to quarterly email issues at thebiomassmonitor.org, thebiomassmonitor.org. Like them on Twitter or follow them on Facebook. So first, thank you for your work, and second, thank you for being on the program.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here.
So what is biomass?
That is a good question. So biomass, the larger category, I would say, is bioenergy. Biomass and biofuels would be under that larger category of bioenergy. And that's basically combusting or burning, incinerating trees, crops, manure, trash, things like that, for electricity, for heat, or turning them into liquid transportation fuels. So everything from a large-scale biomass power plant that burns trees to a wood stove is actually considered bioenergy.
And so burning like agricultural waste, or burning, you know, the sawdust that you sweep up off a floor, that's just being efficient, right? So biomass is great, isn't it?
It depends on your perspective. So of course, anytime you burn anything, you are emitting pollutants into the air. So if you have concerns about air pollutants, which can impact pretty much anyone, but particularly vulnerable populations such as young, elderly, and people with lung diseases, that can be negatively impacting on them. And then the other issue comes into play of what is waste. So there is something that's called forest residue. So you go in there for specific logging operations, and then you have tree tops and limbs. A lot of times that's used for bioenergy and biomass power or biomass heating. A lot of ecologists would say that's actually best left on the forest floor to recover the nutrients that were lost through the logging. And same thing, it could be around the agricultural waste. Some folks say, hey, there's plenty to go around. We can utilize that to produce a certain amount of energy. That's a valid point. Others make the point that, well, actually, we should be returning that into the soil or making compost with it.
So let's get into the, but that's not all it is as well. Aren't
No.
there also, let's talk about, well, let's just cut to the chase and talk about cutting down forests to make electricity.
Absolutely. So that definitely happens. So there is, quote, waste and residue that are used for a lot of these power plants or biomass heating facilities, also called combined heating and power. So they're facilities that produce a little bit of electricity and some heat as well. But whole trees are cut down and used for energy. And that tends to be where most of the concern lies. But of course, it gets tricky. Are there specific stands of forests that are being clear cut for biomass facilities? The answer is yes, there are, but that is in the minority. So I've actually done a lot to call attention to that, because I decided for the Biomass Monitor to get the evidence of what's really going on out in the forest. People talk about it and they don't actually get out there in the woods. So I decided to do that, and on many occasions in Vermont and Oregon and Colorado, I have documented that entire whole trees are being used for biomass energy. And particularly, I wrote a piece about what's going on in the White River National Forest up in Summit County in Colorado, and they are clear-cutting forest stands, typically lodgepole pine, that have experienced some beetle kill. So not all the trees have been killed by beetles. Some of them have. So they've been clear cutting those areas. Some of the logging sales are several hundred acres. So you see several, maybe 5-6 acre cuts of clear cuts. And that is being used to fuel the Eagle Valley Clean Energy Center, which is in Gypsum, Colorado, about 75 miles from there. So in that case, clear-cut national forests specifically for biomass energy. However, as I said, that is not typically what's going on. What's typically going on is there is residue being used, so the tops and the branches of trees are going to these biomass power facilities. And a lot of times there are whole trees. So that can come into play specifically around wildfire fuel reduction logging or restoration logging. So you can put those terms in quotes if you want, because there's lots of debate around whether they're effective or really anything other than commercial logging. So you live out west, you live out in a wetter area, but of course you know some of the other areas in California and throughout the West, Oregon, Washington, have been experiencing more and more wildfire. A lot of scientists are saying that's because it's a climate-driven thing. So when you have a hotter climate, drier climate, and high winds, big fires come and they burn. That's just how it is. The industry says, no, it's because the tree stands are too dense and they're not growing in a natural way, and we need to go in there and log them to prevent future fires. There is some science that suggests that some of this thinning might help with some of the smaller fires, which are not the main concerns. But a lot of the emerging science right now, I would say the majority of the emerging science right now, suggests that these large fires, cutting these trees, thinning the forest, does not actually slow the spread down much at all. The thing you can do is protect directly around the home. So we're talking about 75 feet around the home. But a lot of the argument is that we need to cut these forests and for wildfire, which a lot of people are concerned about, and we can use the trees that we're cutting for bioenergy. So that's where voices in favor of logging are saying, look, it's a win-win situation. We protect people from wildfire, protect the forest. We create an energy source, and we create more, quote, you know, renewable energy, quote, clean energy. So in their minds, it's a win-win-win. A lot of ecologists' minds, it's a lose-lose-lose.
So why I agree with the lose-lose-lose, but can you be explicit as to why it's a lose-lose-lose?
Sure. Well, a lot of the argument behind bioenergy is we need to transition to renewable energy sources. So most people who look at the science will acknowledge the fact that climate change exists and that human carbon emissions are the main source of that. Some people say it's less of a source. Let's just say that almost everyone agrees that it's contributing to climate change. So therefore, the main push is to create renewable energy. Of course, there's many, many issues with, quote, renewable energy. Each of the sources have impacts. You know, there's pros and cons to everything. I think when it gets down to it, you find out, do the pros outweigh the cons or vice versa? But regardless, all of this is being done to create new renewable energy sources. We're, of course, not really looking much at reducing our energy consumption or looking at the way our economies are run and just the way we live our lives as humans. That's usually left out of the argument. But those who are in favor of doing something about climate change typically are advocating for renewable energy. And bioenergy just so happens right now to be the biggest number one form of, quote, renewable energy. I use the term renewable based on the Energy Information Administration that tracks our energy use in the United States. So right now, 43% of renewable energy is from various forms of bioenergy. Of course, when you hear renewable energy, you think, what, wind? You think solar? Wind right now is around 20% of energy. This is from 2015 numbers. And solar is about 6%. So that's about a quarter of renewable energy is actually solar and wind. And the great deal of it is bioenergy. So anyone who wants to move forward bioenergy just at all costs, or sorry, who wants to move forward renewable energy at all costs, so that's typically the Democratic Party, let's just put it that way. Democrats are advocating for more and more renewable energy. Basically what they're doing, whether they realize it or not, is they're advocating for more bioenergy because they wouldn't be able to meet their targets without bioenergy. And that does run into some issues. And that issue is that trees are currently storing and sequestering carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. So it's basically one of our most effective buffers against climate change along with the ocean. So doing nothing right now, the forests are working to limit the negative impacts of climate change. So when we cut those trees and burn them for energy, of course, we're releasing that carbon dioxide back into the atmosphere. What industry says is that is not a concern, because what it is, it's just carbon neutral. So we're not actually adding more to the natural cycle. We're just cycling it through. And again, that argument is that this is biogenic carbon, that the tree carbon is in a constant cycle where trees die, of course, and release the carbon dioxide into the atmosphere over time. Of course, it takes decades to centuries typically, and a lot of that is actually stored in the soil. But the argument, typically the industry argument, and also a lot of supporters of bioenergy who do consider themselves environmentalists, which is where this all gets very tricky, is that it's okay to burn these trees because it's not adding net carbon to the air the way that burning coal, which is sequestered, you know, for millions of years, would be. Now, on the other side of that, you look at a lot of the scientists and a lot of the ecologists, and they say, well, actually, the atmosphere doesn't care where that carbon comes from. If you want to call it tree carbon, if it comes from coal, it's still carbon, and we're at a level where the atmosphere is saturated. Therefore, any carbon added to it may just make things worse. So that's the current debate, and that's the climate concerns around why logging forests for bioenergy is an impact. Of course, the land impacts are simply that all logging does degrade forests. There is certainly logging that can be done that impacts forests less. There's no question about it. As long as we continue to use trees, and we pretty much all do, there's probably going to be some form of logging. But to pretend that somehow we're doing the forest a favor by logging is not based in any science or fact or reason. We can acknowledge, hey, we're going to make an impact on the earth. This is our footprint. Let's try to acknowledge it and limit as much as possible. But then there's the argument, no, no, we're actually improving the forest. And that's where I think industry parts ways with scientists. And again, to make it more confusing, a lot of environmentalists, who I call the new conservationists, to try to make a distinction. So I'm not going to name names or anything like that. You can go to thebiomassmonitor.org, and I've written up the various stances of different mainstream environmental groups on this issue. But anyway, there's a lot of back and forth on that issue, but I think everyone can agree that cutting forest does impact a forest.
So isn't, I mean, so I started my activism 27, 28 years ago as a forest activist, and one of the arguments that was put forward at the time is that they need to cut down the trees because the baby trees will sequester all this great carbon and old trees are decadent. But it ends up that that's, of course, completely wrong. And that the interesting thing that the research is suggesting to me is that as trees age, they actually, in a forest, as a forest ages, it actually sequesters more and more carbon, and it sequesters carbon more quickly.
Right. That is correct, according to the latest studies.
I mean, so the argument, another thing that just pisses me off about this argument is that they say it's carbon neutral basically because the soil will be re-sequestered over the next 100 years as the forest grows, which A, ignores the fact that those trees would have sequestered more carbon, as you said. But also, can you imagine an accounting firm that said, oh, our books are balanced because, yeah, we're spending money now, but we will probably make this money back over the next 100 years.
Right.
If they did this with money, they would all be in prison. But somehow, okay, so where I want to go with this is, just to be clear, my understanding of the laws, at least in Europe, for carbon accounting, the way the regulations work, is that the only carbon that's counted when you burn biomass is like the chainsaws and the trucks, and the actual carbon that's emitted from burning those trees is not even counted as having been emitted by that country.
Well, a lot of times all those other, the transportation and whatnot, are not accounted either. It's a little bit different in UK. It's also complicated and in flux in the United States as well. Right now, the EPA, well, right now, over the last 7 years, the EPA has been in the process of deciding how to actually account for that carbon dioxide because it currently doesn't really. And states have actually gone about and decided to do it on their own. So Oregon had actually declared last year that all biomass energy is carbon neutral. So they just made the call on their own, decided not to wait for the federal government, and that's what they're doing. So whether or not that's going to result in more biomass facilities in Oregon remains to be seen.
It's so funny. It's like if they say it's carbon neutral, that suddenly becomes more important than the physical reality of actual carbon going into the air.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of what goes on in the world, as you know, is not about evidence from credible sources. It's about how it makes people feel. So if something makes you feel good, people will just do it. And I think that's what's happening in this case. I think there are a lot of folks who are okay with bioenergy or supportive of it, who are also okay with accounting for it. I think when it comes down to the argument that we should just assume that it's fine, I don't know where that comes from. Again, I think you can be an advocate for biomass energy and still like, hey, we are going to get this all down. We're going to get all the numbers down because we believe in our product. We believe in this energy. But of course, it's easier for industry to not be regulated. And you can't really blame an industry for advocating for things that are going to enhance its bottom line, because that's the whole reason that these companies exist, is to make money. So the other side is going to have to come from the environmental movement. They're the other side of the story. So when I cover issues on bioenergy, I always talk to industry and their trade groups. I want to hear what they have to say. They have a perspective that deserves to be out there. And then I talk to environmental voices. What I learned is that a lot of the mainstream environmental groups, let's talk out of both sides of their mouth. And I have to make an effort to talk to what I call ecosystem advocates, or those who are biocentric, who basically oppose bioenergy across the lines, to actually get that critique. Because think about it this way. Imagine, let's say I was writing an article on coal, right? And so I talk, oh, let me talk to Peabody Coal, see what they say. The coal industry says coal is great, let's burn it all, right? That's what they say. Environmentalists typically say, no, we need to get off coal. Now, imagine that the voice that I got for the environmental group was, so I have industry saying all coal is great, and then the environmental voice was, actually, most coal is good. We just don't want you to burn a certain kind of coal in certain facilities. That would be craziness. That wouldn't be a debate. That's basically the same side of the argument. That's sort of what's happened with bioenergy and these mainstream environmental groups and media coverage of these environmental groups. So if we want to talk for a couple minutes about why I feel like that's confusing, we can. Does that sound like a topic you want to get into?
Oh, absolutely. But what I would like to do, if you don't mind, is I would like to take a step back. I definitely want to come back to that. I want you to talk about that as long as you want.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's some ground I want to cover first, which is we've been talking about forests,
right?
But aren't there also, in terms of bioenergy or biofuels or biomass, whichever one this goes into, I'm not sure.
Right.
Don't they also simply grow crops?
Right.
And I'm wondering if we can talk about the scale of that, because I know the only thing I know for sure is that in Germany, this is a little factoid. Mm-hmm. Now I have to find it real quick. In Germany, 2 million hectares is devoted to crop-based biofuels. That's 17% of arable land and 6% of total land in Germany, which means they're growing a lot of crops for this too. So mm-hmm. Can we put the forests aside for a moment and mm-hmm. talk about this other form of biofuels, which I don't know much about?
Sure. Yeah, I'm definitely more of an expert on the forest end, but I've certainly have been covering the crop aspect. And basically, most of bioenergy in the U.S. is from ethanol, and that's right now it's corn ethanol. So that is a lot of what bioenergy is. It's not typically what gets the headlines as much as the forest issues, I guess, because there's more controversy there. But certain groups have been focusing on that. And some of the groups that are a bit wishy-washy on the forest issues have been honing in on corn ethanol. So that's sort of the uniting force between the environmental groups, is they've all pretty much decided that corn ethanol specifically is an issue for various reasons, because it does use up limited arable cropland and potentially spike food prices in this kind of cascade of economics. It does degrade the soil. Corn is a very soil intensive crop, and in many ways, they're also just advocating for other forms of bioenergy. So they'll say that, you know, waste feedstocks, or they're advocating a lot for cellulosic ethanol, which can come from trees, but also from woody plants and other crops. So typically a lot of the folks who are opposing the corn ethanol, which is the majority of what's going on right now, are doing so because they're advocating for other forms of liquid biofuels, which will have their impacts in other ways. Again, we'll have their pros and cons like anything else. And again, the same issues come into play with utilizing of land for fuel as opposed to food, when farmers are subsidized to grow these fuel crops as opposed to food crops. Like, what are they going to choose? Of course, you know, they're just trying to make a living, and they're going to grow a lot of fuel crops. So what we have is certain invasive species that are being tested. Certain other sorts of grasses called miscanthus grass is one form of bioenergy that they're developing. And again, they may have different impacts than forest biomass energy, but it is still, we have to take a look at, there are a certain amount of people in the world, there people consume a certain amount, and we live on a finite earth. So at what point is this too much? Have we already reached that tipping point? I think the issue with a lot of these fuels is that it can be distracting us from the bigger issues that we have to confront around the way our economies run, and the way we live our lives and our consumption, the way corporate industry is encouraged to expand at all costs, yet we live on a finite planet. So I think that's my biggest concern with bioenergy, is that at most, it's really only going to provide a certain amount of energy. I can understand industries trying to make up a certain amount through that. The idea that we're going to replace all fossil fuels with bioenergy is just scientifically impossible. It's a less dense feedstock. So I'm certainly not advocating for fossil fuels. I personally do agree that we need to be getting off of fossil fuels. But if you look at a chunk of coal, it's more dense than a handful of grass. So you have to burn a lot more of that material to produce the same amount of energy. So again, that is not in any way advocating for coal. That is just stating physics.
So, and I do want to talk about the larger issue of consumption too, after we talk about the environmental stuff. But I have one more question about the biofuels first, which is, and I don't know if you know this number, but the factoid I just threw out, that 17% of arable land and 6% of total land in Germany is devoted to growing crops to be burned. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea what this, that seems like a lot of land to me. And is it a huge amount of land in the United States that is also devoted to this, or is it a trivial amount of land, or is it, what's the scale in the U.S.?
Right. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. Obviously we live in a larger country than Germany, so we have more land mass, etc. So it's going to be a bigger land mass that is utilized for bioenergy over there than here. So I can't tell you off the top of my head. I can tell you it is certainly increasing, and that a lot of folks who are concerned about land use issues are very concerned about any form of bioenergy, biofuels, particularly this expansion of crop-based biofuels that, yes, will be taking more land that could potentially be used for food. Some folks say that we can use that, what's called, non-arable cropland, that we wouldn't be growing crops otherwise. Permaculturalists would disagree and said, actually, we could be growing our nut trees there. So there was always an argument for growing food instead of fuel. Of course, we do need to do something about fossil fuels. That's why this is such an interesting topic, And I did wish it got more play in the media and got more discussion out there. But I think the reason why this isn't discussed as much is because environmental groups don't really want to talk about it because they're a bit contradictory on their stances.
Well, that seems like a good transition back to what you wanted to talk about a minute ago. Can you talk more about that contradiction in environmentalism?
Right. Well, so let me discuss why I think it is this way. So like I said before, you know, I'm going to simplify things and say typically the Democratic Party is advocating for renewable energy. It's not that simple, but let's just say overall, if you said what would be the difference in policy platform between Republicans and Democrats, a lot of Democrats are saying we're concerned about climate change and we want to develop more renewable energy. So in order to develop more renewable energy right now, they're going to have to develop more bioenergy. So that's where it runs into a bit of a pickle. So they don't want to come out there and say, we are going to cut more trees down. We are going to replace cropland with, they don't want to say that because there are concerns, ecological concerns around that. So what they do is they don't actually talk about bioenergy while at the same time advocating for policies that would expand bioenergy. Now, again, if this was industry who is across the board just trying to expand energy sources for, you know, to provide jobs, to enhance the economy, whatever their point of view is, that's a consistent point of view. Of course, industry is going to advocate for that. What gets confusing is, again, when that other side of the story to really get this whole debate in focus is not really even sure what they believe. So the environmental groups, the mainstream environmental groups, typically hitch themselves to the Democratic Party. They believe that those candidates represent more pro-environmental views than Republicans, which I would argue is probably true. So what they're not going to do is they're not going to go out and say, that's why we're going to oppose half of the renewable energy sources that our favorite party is advocating for. But over time, over years, the grassroots groups started realizing, hey, this bioenergy is a problem. Typically, this is, you know, as you're well aware, most of the environmental issues originate from small grassroots communities who take a look at something and say, this doesn't seem great. And then over time, the large environmental groups, in a sense, either get embarrassed for not tackling it or realize it is an issue and they want to help it because they care about environmental issues. Or if you're more cynical, you can say it's because they want to get foundation funding to continue that topic and they want to control where the discussion goes. But this is what happened with the biomass issue. It took about 10 years for it to go from a grassroots movement where typically it was a biomass power plant proposed in a community and then they oppose it to large environmental groups coming in and taking over the issue. And then you actually find that they're advocating for most forms of bioenergy while at the same time getting media coverage for opposing typically what is biomass power plants from whole trees, which is a concern, no question, but put that in perspective, that's probably, so biomass power plants that produce electricity is probably about 10% of bioenergy, and we don't have the exact numbers, it's hard to say, but let's just say off the top of my head that 1% of that is from, 10% of that 10% is from whole trees. So we're talking about 1%. And that is certainly something that people should be concerned about, the whole tree cutting. But that's mostly what these environmental groups are fighting about. And meanwhile, they're advocating for sometimes most of the forms of bioenergy, which in could also be cutting whole trees and actually emitting higher levels of pollution. Because ironically, some of these smaller facilities, which are called combined heat and power facilities or biomass heating facilities, they don't have the same pollution controls. So it just gets a little bit messy because it's no longer a consistent argument. And I think what happens is the environmental groups, they realize that. And so they're not really putting it on. It's not on the front of their websites. It's not in their newsletters. They're kind of covering the bases. And sometimes what they do is they enlist smaller environmental groups to do that work and they sort of support that and they gear all the media towards those individuals. So these groups can still claim that they're engaged in some way, and then they can kind of prop up these smaller mainstream groups. And again, I think any perspective that people want to have is totally legitimate to put out your point of view. I think it should be in the debate. But when what's being left out is the actual other side of the view that, well, maybe we shouldn't be burning plant material for energy to replace fossil fuels because it's the exact same paradigm of industrial scale energy. Those folks are almost never included in the discussion. And so the Biomass Monitor, we make sure to get those folks' views, as well as the mainstream environmental groups who are doing a lot of work on this topic, deserve the credit, but they're not the only ones who are engaged. And again, you can go to website, thebiomassmonitor.org. I have an article, Where Do Environmental Groups Stand on Bioenergy? No one ever wrote that article because no one wanted to really, maybe no one cared enough to take a look. And again, I would argue the reason people aren't taking a look at this is because the environmental groups aren't talking about it. And it is their duty to discuss it, and it is their duty to put their platform out there. And I think if people became a bit more aware that their favorite environmental group is advocating for tree cutting, they would have some questions at least.
Well, I happen to know more about Germany than some other countries, because Germany's been pushed so much as a, quote, renewable miracle, or the, you know, a miracle of transforming the economy. And I'm just saying this in terms of validating what you just said, that we hear that it's this huge miracle, and they talk all on and on about how wind and solar, but it's the same statistics over there with the, I think it's about 50% or 60% of the so-called renewable energy in Germany is from biomass.
Correct.
And it's this, it's exactly what you're talking about, that if you hear somebody on Democracy Now! Or you hear some environmentalist giving some speech, all they ever talk about is wind and solar, which, as we know, have problems of their own, but leave that aside, mm-hmm. they account for, I don't know what it is, 3% of total energy production in Germany. It's some very, very small amount.
Right.
And yet we don't, I'm just validating what you just said, that we never sure. hear about biomass, which is one reason I wanted to talk to you.
Yeah, and I think if the American public found out the facts, if they were actually able to see what's going on in the woods and to hear the arguments from people who are actually critiquing it across the board, and then they still decide, hey, this is great, then more power to them. If that's what people want to do, I don't have, I'm not in control of anyone. That's how a democracy works. But my concern is that people don't have enough information to make up their minds. And the media does not do a very good job of this because, you know, and I would say that this is corporate mainstream media, and this is a lot of times even alternative media. They don't have the time to look into these issues because of deadlines, and they need to break the story first. Also, they don't necessarily have the scientific background to be able to understand the complexities. And a lot of times, if you're a journalist and you have your source in NRDC, that's the one who you call for everything. Oh, they're an environmental group. And that's just a misunderstanding of how grassroots movements work, because in many ways, grassroots movements are not supportive of what mainstream environmental groups are doing.
And again, as a longtime grassroots activist, that is something that we, that all the groups I've been associated with have experienced time and again, that we would oftentimes end up, you know, having to fight the timber industry, and then at the same time, I don't want to say fight, but I'll say struggle against the mainstream organizations quite often.
Right. And again, they have a perspective, and it should be out there in the media, but it shouldn't be the only perspective.
So something that a lot of indigenous people have said to me that really hit me hard is that one of the first and most important things that we have to do is to decolonize our hearts and minds. And what they've said that means, to me at least, is that one of the things is to make our loyalty to the land, to switch our loyalty away from the capitalist system and to the land. And it seems to me, and let me know if you think this is wrong, that part of the contradiction that a lot of the mainstream environmental organizations face is that they, on one level, believe they're about saving the planet, but they don't and with this question, I'm going to try to transition into your larger question of consumption. Mm-hmm. That they want to save the world, but at the same time, they don't question the entire capitalist system, and they don't question the system that is killing the planet, and then they end up with a sort of mixed loyalty that can end up being very confusing. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I would say that that's true for most of the cases. I've been affiliated with environmental groups in my past. I know lots of folks from radical environmentalists to the folks who just lobby in Washington for mainstream environmental groups. And I would say that most of these mainstream enviros, big green, whatever you want to call them, the new conservationists, most of them as individuals mean well. I think that there are a handful that are definitely opportunists who are in a sense kind of mercenaries, and they just go whichever way the wind's blowing to make sure that they get the grant funding. And they don't, you know, they may in general care, but they're not looking to be on the right side of history. They're just looking to make sure that they have a role. And granted, it's hard to make a living in that field, so I understand that pressure. But most of those folks, I think, believe that they're doing the right thing. They have the idea that we have to be pragmatists, we have to be practical, we have to meet things in the middle somewhere. And I just think that I think they misunderstand what their role is. I mean, that would be like if you have an attorney in the courtroom and it's like, yeah, you know, defending somebody who's supposedly committed a crime. And then you're saying, yeah, you know, he committed a crime, but he's not that bad a person. Like, that's a terrible attorney. You would fire that attorney in a second. The job in the courtroom is to advocate with the best evidence that you have for your client. So if your client is the environment and you're an environmentalist, you should be making every argument you can to say this is something that would protect and foster the earth. This is something that would damage it. Of course, the ending of the discussion is going to be somewhere in the middle. So it's not like environmentalists have any real power and can dictate that, you know, not another tree could be cut. They're not even advocating for that anyway. But even if they could, that's not the power they have. I think what it comes down to is, yeah, they're not looking to critique the larger structures or the underlying forces behind this. They want to continue to advocate for issues in a way that they think is politically expedient. I think you could argue that that method has been used for decades, and if we don't think that there's been progress on climate change and land protection, then maybe it would be time to look at things from a different point of view. But again, there's livings to be made. There are folks that are trying to, you know, continue their job. And of course, you take a look at where the funding comes from for a lot of these mainstream environmental groups. It's from these private foundations. And that money doesn't just come out of nowhere. That's typically big corporate money. So whether it's a vast conspiracy or not, I'm not necessarily sold on that. But for instance, Pew Charitable Trusts, it's one of the biggest groups foundations out in the West, and they fund a lot of the new conservationist groups. So they're the groups that are advocating for forests, but also advocating for more logging. So kind of the mainstream greens there. So you look at the funding for Pew Charitable Trust, you find out the person who started it up was the guy from Sun Oil or Sunoco at the time. So that's petroleum money. So that's big industry money that's going into protecting the environment. Maybe his children and the ones who took over this foundation had a change of heart. But at the same time, do you really think that they would flip to do anything that really opposes the industry that created their lifestyles? In my mind, I think what they're trying to do is saying, hey, let's find that common ground between advocating for the environment and advocating for humanity, and then that's what we'll advocate, and we'll call that environmentalism. I call that new conservationism. That's certainly not a biocentric point of view. It may be where things end up in the end, but the idea that from the start that's going to be the environmentalist side of the argument seems a bit defeatist.
So you said in the middle of that, you said something about they don't really take a new position. And what would be the new position that you would... Well, instead of me sort of stuttering here and stammering out a question. Why don't you just talk about what you think about the level of consumption, the relationship between biomass and the... We have like 7 or 8 minutes left. Mm-hmm. Can you start talking about... You've hinted at the fact that instead of just looking at cutting down forests and burning the tops of trees and growing corn for ethanol, that we should start examining our the energy consumption itself. Right. So do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Sure, absolutely. When it gets down to it, my concern with bioenergy, you know, I believe a lot of the ecologists are making valid points around carbon and air pollution and forest impacts. I think all of that's legitimate and needs to be discussed, and those may well be valid concerns. I understand industry's argument. They're saying, hey, well, we need to do something that isn't fossil fuels. Let's do another form of energy. We can grow some of this ourselves. It can provide jobs. I understand that argument. But what's happening is we're leaving out the point that we continue to consume more and more energy every year, and whatever the limits are to our planet, they exist. So have we already passed those limits? Some people think so. I think there's some credible evidence that suggests we're already past that point. Some people are, oh, in 20 years, 100 years, let's just say it's 1,000, you know, who knows? It seems unlikely that it would be that far in the future. But regardless, eventually we're going to have to come up with a different way of doing things. And the idea that a technology will always save us, that we can just plug in some other magic source, I'm a fan of science fiction and fantasy, but I know when those don't apply to my real life. So I think it's a little bit dangerous for us to always kick the can down the road. And I feel like that's what bioenergy can do. So the folks who are concerned about fossil fuel use have called attention to a lot of energy issues, but those folks are almost never saying that's why we should figure out ways to reduce our consumption. Now, I'm not trying to demean that and suggest that we take shorter showers or to change the light bulb and everything's fixed. I think that's nonsense. Those sorts of little tweaks are, you know, that's great. You know, you can do that, sure. You know, turn off the faucet while you're brushing your teeth. But that alone is not going to accomplish anything. In a way, that's another distraction from deeper changes that need to happen. And who's actually even advocating for these changes? Well, I would say it's actually writers such as yourself. I also write some other pieces and I write some fiction. I feel like that's the best way to actually get these bigger changes across, which do involve tackling our economic system. So be it, you know, capitalism, however you want to frame it. Some folks are saying we need a steady state economy because capitalism is based on forever expansion, which cannot happen. And steady state is limiting that to a certain degree. However you want to do it, we have to look at our economies, the way we value growth, you know, what economics means to us. We have to look at our own ways of life. So just how we go about our work. So we're driving to work at a particular business, et cetera, every day. That's what a lot of people do. There are other ways to go about looking at what a career is. And then it gets even deeper, and what are our interpersonal relationships? Why do we feel the need to consume all the time? Is it because we're not tied into our community? You know, this gets into some deep stuff here, but I think that's where the discussion eventually needs to go. And when we get stymied too much and just, oh, which energy source should we plug in to our magic plug here, I think that it keeps us from having these real discussions. And so I think it's looking at what is missing in our lives that we feel the need to consume so much. Why do we feel like to find a partner we need to, you know, make money so we can purchase certain cosmetics or clothes or be in some sort of style or fashion so we can attract that member? Going into deeper issues even of, can we just be okay with ourselves and not feel like we have to tie into this larger culture that we know can be damaging? Those are really tough discussions. Environmental groups might not actually be equipped for those discussions. Right now, I don't even know. There's very few folks who are the voices to discuss those topics. I think these big topics like energy, need to be discussed, but then they should always be, whenever possible, brought back into that deeper discussion of basically just what are we doing with our lives.
Well, I think what you're saying is hugely important. And we have just a couple minutes left. And there's two directions I want to go. One of them is that let's you mentioned science fiction and fantasy, and let's pretend that we have a fantasy situation where we have a voluntary transformation to a sane and sustainable way of living. But let's pretend for a moment.
Okay.
So would you see, I mean, apart from cooking over stoves, I mean, burning wood for stoves or anything, drop what I just said. So in this voluntary transformation that involves these sorts of social and personal and psychological and infrastructural changes that you're talking about, what role would you see bioenergy, industrial bioenergy, that's where I want to separate out the personal cooking.
Mm-hmm.
What role would you see bioenergy taking in that, if any?
Right.
And if you can do that in 1 minute, then I have a follow-up question, which is, and you can just skip the first question if you want, what can people who hear this interview, what do you want them to do? So those are my two questions. You can either do one, the other, or neither.
Right. Okay, well, I'll do both really quickly. So I think you hit the nail on the head in many ways. Industrial scale energy is something that needs to be questioned. That is where a lot of the environmental concerns come into play. Of course, if we have every single person burning from their wood stove, there is still localized pollution. So we might need to be moving beyond combustion eventually anyway. I am not a scientist, so I can't tell you the answer to all that, but I think that those are always going to be concerns. And then moving on to the other topic, what can people do? I think at this point, I think people need to just be better informed. And I think that means, of course, learning more about the issues that you care about from the voices that you already believe in. But I think it also means listening to the other side and, you know, if only to strengthen your own views. And unfortunately, most media sources don't do that. So I would say the best thing you can do is seek out alternative media sources, whatever you want to call them, independent media sources. Listen to them, share them with others, and support them financially. Because if you hate the mainstream media, and everyone says that they do, everyone says they hate the mainstream media, and then you ask them, oh, well, are you supporting independent media? The answer is almost always no. So is it really that much of a surprise?
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for that. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Josh Schlossberg, thebiomassmonitor.org. Support him. This is Derek Jensen from Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.